This is a podcast from the AHRC ICT Methods Network at www.methodsnetwork.ac.uk.
Hello everyone, I'm Fabio Chiravegna. I will give the first part of this talk, then Mark will step in, give a more historically oriented presentation than I'm able to do as a computer scientist, and then I will draw some conclusions. If you think about the resources that we have, the archives that we have in general, not just in your domain but in a number of other areas, we know that information is often spread across multiple domains, multiple non-integrated archives. You might think that this is typical of your community. I can tell you that in industry it's absolutely the same. People don't talk to each other. They have information that other parts of the company don't have, and they don't know that they don't have it. We just spent one year in a company trying to define an archive that, as they needed it, to discover that another department had exactly the same thing already done. So it's really a huge problem. You don't know that the information is there, you don't know where it is, and if there is. And very often the information is in textual documents, and so they are difficult to search. We have seen yesterday some applications about using GIS, for example, to do something. Well, that's very useful if you have the data in a database, but if it is in a text, you cannot do it. The kind of search tools that you generally have for text are string matching tools, and if you don't know the right terms, you are stuck. You might use some terms, you might find something. This is very useful with Google when you have 20 million pages out there. When you have a limited number of pages or documents to search, it can be very, very unsuccessful. We think that the user must search, generally, find the information, search for the information, find the information, piece the information together, and there are problems like redundancy of information. We spend a lot of time on the same part, information repeated many times, but there is data sparsity at the same time, so you don't find it. The distribution across archives is a problem because you're looking maybe in the wrong place, and then there is the problem of synonymity. When you have the term that is different terms for the same object, or homonymity when you have the same term for different types of objects or people. And all these problems tend to hamper the search effectiveness. And again, it's not just in this domain, it's much a larger problem in larger archives. What we think is that the users should not be focusing on searching or browsing. This is the typical thing that people think when they've coped with the web. Google is able to search. Well, but you shouldn't search. You're not interested in searching. You are interested in solving a problem. So the user should be focusing on reason, on finding the information, in using the information. So to create more knowledge or more information, whatever you're trying to do. So basically, the main problem that you have in text is the fact that the information is not structured. You can't use it automatically, and why we would like to have it processable in an automatic way. And also there is another point that is very important. When we search for information, we create knowledge, we actually use the information that we have. But if you think of Google, for example, there's no memory of what you're looking for. Well, we think that really you should be able to exploit the information that you have to search better and to do better what you're doing. So the things that I know, the things that I've seen, should empower my search. And not just within my brain, but also in the tool. So if we have distributed repositories and we want to extract the information, what is that we need to do? Well, we need to discover where the information is. We need to extract it in order to make it available for automatic processing, and we need to integrate the piece of knowledge, the piece of information from one text document to another. Also, then we have to present the information in a way that is meaningful. And this is independently from the fact that something is in a text or in a database. in principle, you shouldn't care where the information is at the first stage when you search for it. This is an example from another application that we are doing as part of two projects. This is done with Rolls-Royce for jet engines. Well, they really have huge problems in terms of accessing archives that are huge. Typical jet engine produces 1 gigabyte of data, vibration data, for a transoceanic flight. That means that about 20 of these collections can say probably fit on your laptop and fill the disk. There are 40,000 engine flying constantly around the world, and if you try to store it, in 20 days you have filled all the disks in the world. You can't do it. You can't even store it. But if they find irregularities, what they have to do, they have to store part of the data, they write reports, they take pictures, and every 2-3 years an engine is overhauled. It's an operation that costs about $5 million. It's really, really expensive. It takes 20 days, and they produce financial information, pictures, text, engine are tested again. And so the life cycle for them will easily sum up to several terabytes. All our computers in this room are not able to store it. And so the role of information extraction is to make information available independently from where it is around the world, independently from the data format, the archive it is, and so to make it available for automatic processing, automatic search. There are many other applications like emergency response in the event of a bird flu. Can you locate all the chicken farms in the country and put them on a map so that the environment agency can go there and check? The depot explosion in ML Amsterdam was another case in which they had to identify all the sensors, the place that they could potentially evacuate. Unfortunately, it was not on a working day, so they didn't have the problem of evacuating schools and other places, but that's another problem. So what is it we are trying to do with Armadillo? Is to try to apply this kind of technologies to an environment of historical research. So to enable historians to ask and evaluate questions that previously were very hard to answer. The Historical London is a showcase, and the approach that we are trying to use is to combine information extraction, information integration, and presentation. So the information extraction means associating portions of documents to objects in an ontology. The idea is that you can bootstrap the information extraction, you can enable information extraction by using your previous knowledge, the things that you know, the names that you know, the things that you have already seen. This is an example of information that has been already manually typed. You can see the Old Bailey documents, where you have, of course, there are the different trials in the document. Then each person, for example, can be annotated as a defendant. Specific street as associated to a crime location, the criminal charge, whatever it is, the verdict, and the sentence. This is a way in which you extract information. This was done manually, but we are trying to do it automatically. The information integration is the moment in which you take the information that you have extracted from one piece of, from one text, for example, and you try to relate it to something else that you have already seen, or something else you haven't seen at the moment. So to something that is in a different archive or in a different document. And what we try to do is to automatically integrate the information in a way that we will see. We don't want to be too intelligent. We want to enable people doing it. And then the final step is presenting the information in a way that is meaningful. This is just a very simple example. I will go into details in the second part of my talk. This is, for those of you who have seen it, is Google Maps, that has this idea of taking actual maps. And then you have information that is structured now, that is taken from text in our case, but in this case it's just from lists. For example, every balloon here represents a pub. And you can click on the balloon and you get the information on the about the pub, the specific pub. This is a way in which you take information and you present it in a map. You can think that when you extract the information from different archives, different types of media as well, you will be able to do something very similar. So in Armadillo, we try to do something of this type, and we will show it. If you have never seen Google Maps or Google Earth, the work on this principle I've identified and shown to you. Now I'll hand it to Mark.
Thank you very much, Fabio. Just some words now about the databases that we are mining. In historical data mining, what we might call the haystack, is not, as I see it, an entity that can readily be defined or universally agreed as an exclusive field of inquiry. Historical data is typically compiled from very different archive sources over intersecting periods and for very varied purposes. Its geographical and temporal definitions have generally been locally determined without consultation with other compilers of data and designed in relatively few common formats. Its construction has often to answer one set of rather specific historical questions. Where there is congruency, it occurs fortuitously. Because historians advantage typically no one set of documentation over another set, there's no evidential canon. Evidential survival is nearly always a greater constraint for historians than its surplus. Historians therefore tend to make most use of electronically available data when it's offered to them in formats whose taxonomies are simple: encyclopedias, dictionaries, catalogues of printed books, calendars, and so forth. In the electronic set of historical materials that currently exist, there's almost without exception a series of tensions as to how they should be organised. Geographically, as in the classic Valley of the Shadow archive, very highly structured. Rather loosely stacked, as in the case of British History Online, or not even stacked at all, as in the case of the various parliamentary archive papers. So making a stack is therefore an artificial, open-ended process. We're not working towards a set of sets, a haystack of haystacks, the equivalent of all historical material from all periods, all places, all institutions, all individuals. To imagine this historical pansophy is to understand why it will never happen. The plenum of the past, what we construct in our historical imaginations when we refer to 18th century London or Reformation France, is fundamental to our conceptualization as historians, but it is a plenum which is just that, imaginary. The haystacks which we construct the imaginary plenums from are congeries of data put together in contingent fashion to help us in that imagination. They have no more ontological value than the fact that this or that archive of papers happened to find their way into this or that archive. So here's our stack of 12 data sets relating to 18th century London. It's baggy in its chronology, the long 18th century in other words, and the reason for choosing these is from the fact that they made up from quite wide ranges of formats of material, from XML marked up text, such as the Old Bailey proceedings, through to traditional data sets like the wills from the Canterbury set. They remain, therefore, this is typical of many of the five, in fact, of the sets that we're using, in that it's deposited with the AHDS. And of course, quite a lot of investment has been put in over the past 20 years into electronic data, and often these sets remain consultable only as discrete entities. They're offline, and they're conserved at the AHDS, rather difficult for us to reuse. And one of the questions implied in this research in Armadillo is whether or not data mining can be used as a means of data reusability. But there is a legitimate set of questions in our minds too. The questions are, as always with historical questions, contingent, capable of refinement upon engagement with the evidence, likely to be fine-tuned as the complexity of the material reveals the delicacies of answering the questions. The questions are about the social composition and social dynamics of a huge city, growing as never before and fast becoming the largest concentration of human beings in an urban environment on the planet. Here, if anywhere, is a world where historians simply cannot rely on their traditional means of inquiry to understand patterns and processes that are implicit within the data. The variables are too large, the potential sets of questions impossible to quantify. But if the fixed points are few, how does data mining develop a workable ontology? Now, ontology construction has become a specialism in its own right. There's a huge literature on the subject, it's growing. The subject has its own internal debates of a variety of kinds. For our purposes, we should simply note that the ontologies have not been applied to date with great success to historical data. This is not because history isn't a scientific subject. As the ancient historian J.B. Bury said back in 1903 in an inaugural lecture in Cambridge, history is a science, no more, no less, meaning that it's a subject with its own taxonomies, ways of organising its knowledge, its own knowledge maps. The problem is that these knowledge maps are rather few, not to a fully agreed scale, a map a landscape which tends to change after it's been mapped. One example of a sophisticated historical ontology is the Vicodi project developed at the University of East Anglia, an ambitious attempt at high-level knowledge mapping for the historical domain. Its basic classifications are on the left of the slide. It identifies as subcategories of these animals, artifacts, abbeys, cathedrals, and attempts to define the conceptual hierarchies within which to understand them. Artifact, for example, is a sub-concept of object, and in its term, it is the super-concept for 11 sub-concepts of clothing, structure, writing, vehicle, armament, relic, liturgical object, pollution, etc. Well, the Vicodi exercise has been useful to us in understanding the difficulties in constructing ontologies. The fundamental problems are that the categories in ontologies have to be coherent and definable, constructed of separate entities, and to be fully implementable, relatively complete sets. So although the Vicodi ontology may well prove of some use in, for example, cataloguing historical objects in museums, etc., what it does is map knowledge that we already have, rather than enable us to mine what we don't know. Its coarse granularity doesn't make it capable of finding the kind of information that we're trying to extract from our sources for London. To do that, we have to devise local ontologies. And we've decided to restrict ourselves to limited categories that are capable, albeit problematically, of having an identity in historical data of the kind that we're using. This is because one of the fundamental dilemmas of ontology construction is that the more complex they become, the less comprehensible they are. In order to construct the hierarchy, we start with a thing. A thing is anything which has been previously identified in a markup or database field. One of the key subcategories of thing is names, what we call social agents. A social agent can be a person or an institution. A social agent can have a role. These roles can be multiple. They can embrace familial, social, and other relationships. I should stress at this point that we attach no epistemological validity to these social roles. The fact that a document declares someone to be an apprentice doesn't mean we believe that necessarily to be true. We're simply using it as an indicative element to find other things likely to be similar to that thing. It's here that the power of a data mining agent like Arbadillo begins to become apparent. We now see that it handles how it handles a complex name-based algorithm to begin to disentangle what may be references to one and the same thing across our ingested 12 data sets. And if we had more time, I'd be able to show you what we call the bubbly diagram, that's to say the way in which it maps in a circle, spider-like circle, the relevance metrics of the things that it has found. Imagine, if you will, that the relevance metrics including other variables, person roles, chronology and place determinants, all becoming a refining mechanism for discovering likeness. To return to the ontology, we can include a thing that refers to place. Once again, we try and make strong, simple, clear statements. The thing may be a place, by which we mean a statement of location. It is imprecise, and its meaning may change over time. A place might be a public house, whose name may change. It might be a street. It might be a bridge, whose location, like London Bridge, might be modified over time. A location, on the other hand, is a particular point in space, a map reference or grid coordinate. meant that a place may not, or may, be linked to a location. Our ontologies for time, too, has only two subcategories, point in time and time period, and the ontology enables the user to define both for mining purposes. The fourth and final component of our simple ontology is the thing we call resource. It seems evident when one says it, but it took us some time to arrive at the obvious fact that the archival or library source of our materials itself constitutes an ontology. Again, we wanted to make it a simple structure, and we decided to disaggregate major divisions of material within a record from those external to the record, thematic and physical divisions. Well, how does data mining based on these ontologies differ from standard retrieval software? Firstly, underlying algorithms use information from defined fields or designated XML markup to generate other possible instantiations of things using, as Fabio determined, indicated, information redundancy, regularity of expression, and so forth, as a means of generating likelihood. Secondly, they then match likelihoods. In this instance, the thing John Alexander Mackenzie occurs in a trial record before the Old Bailey Court, where he's sentenced to death. Another thing, Alexander Mackenzie, appears in selected criminal papers as granted a pardon. Armadillo makes a 60% likelihood match, rather underestimating, you may think, the likelihood that these two individuals are one and the same. Of course, with other information on social role and location into the equation, the match goes up. In this way, Armadillo is gradually building up a knowledge map of the data sets in question. Secondly, unlike standard retrieval software, the user can switch on or off any part of the ontology in order to fine-tune an inquiry. This is an important replication of what we as historians frequently do, i.e. we allow ourselves to be led by the data in the questions that we ask of it, realizing as we search the questions that are worth asking and those that are perhaps less worth asking. This finally is the prototype interface that we're currently looking at with potential users. As you see, there's a search box. Below the search box are the basic ontology classifiers, apparently only two of them on the slide. And when you click on these, the relevant ontology comes below, and you can click on and off the various components to suit your data mining requirement. The documents are then returned in a hit list with header details extracted at the top. The bottom pane gives you the detail of the document with the data mine components highlighted. One final point, which is the sense of a magnet to find the needle in the haystack. One of the most frustrating features of current search retrieval software for me is its inability to learn from the searches undertaken by one user in order to inform the searches of others. The intelligent web applications are teaching us more and more about how to do this, and one of the relatively simple yet powerful strategies for data mining is the notion of a name authority file. Something that you can search data by applying to it a file such as, for example, the lists of parishes for the cities of London and Westminster, lists of street names subdivided by parishes. These lists of Huguenots in early 18th century London, goldsmiths, silversmiths, traded goods, bankers, hospitals, all currently already exist, and they could become the bedrock of local taxonomies which could be applied to Armadillo and then used to be the equivalent of a magnet in finding the needle in our haystack. Let me hand over then to Fabio for the final.
In the remaining 5 minutes, I show some of the things that are in this vision demonstrator. The first thing is, how do you search, for example? This is the Well, you have a keyword searching, that is the usual keyword searching, that can be combined with searching in the ontology. So, for example, if you click on church, you can specify if something about the church, the name, for example, and you can have some precise match if you really want must, but also you can have an imprecise match. And then when you search, for example, you will have things that you've already seen, that the documents are ranked according to the matching, and the metadata that is extracted, like the source, the date, but also what you can have is the terms that you have searched and the terms that have been found. So in this case, there is a precise match. In this case, it's slightly different. In this case, it's, well, slightly different, but it's still relevant. Maybe this is completely irrelevant if it, if it exists. The other thing is, well, in this part here, what you can have is that the elements here can be associated to services. So this is London Bridge. Maybe you can provide a service that locates it on a map. Or you can see relevant tags that have been found in that specific area. Or you can find other bridges if you want. So the basic point is also, how do you present the information? What do you do when you have extracted the information? The thing that you have seen is for empowering search. But then we can do something more. We can present the information, for example, using a map. Like in this case, for example, you can annotate a map using places that you have found, or the locations that you have found, and classify that place where pets occur, thanks to owner. Then you click on it, and what you get are the basic facts that have been found about it. So it's a theft in 1825, the offender is this person, this is the source, so you can click and get the document. But you can have more about the offenders. Do we have other people with a similar name that could be the same person? Do we know anything about the area? What happened in the same period, for example, in the area? What about this kind of crime? Or more about the period? This is an example of clicking on the offender. Well, there are other offenders that are very likely to be this, like this Mary McKenzie is what we found. This has a slightly different name 2 years later. Was accused of something similar. This person is probably something else because it's too far away, too later, too late. This is the access to the document. So you have everything at one click away. That's the idea. So what is the what are the conclusions? The conclusion is that if you are able to help discover the information, you can help users focus on the relevant information, reduce the overhead of searching. So the person can, of course, trust the system or not trust the system and revert to the old methods. But in general, it enables to reduce the overhead in searching and the frustration in searching. When you extract the information, you make it available for automated processing. So you don't have keywords anymore. You have what we call concepts, but probably it's too far in this, this too strong a term in this community. When you integrate the information, you have people exploring the correlation among facts, among objects that you have. And when you present it, you have summarized the data. These tools are not meant to replace humans. There is no way in which we can do it. The idea is to empower more effective studies and give people the time to do interesting things. So the user role is to ask the right historical question, navigate the repositories using the information extracted in an automatic way, use the new data as an addition to traditional approaches, so this doesn't prevent you from using keywords. Generate further information or knowledge and feedback the new information to the system. As said before, the things that I know, the things like the list that Mark showed before, are ways of empowering further search. And that's the end.